we are live at Coco's Pub. We are in Lauraville. There's a sign right on the door, only nice people allowed. So they let Luke in. He just made it in under, it's kind of like at Hershey Park, you know, just under the right height to get in here. He's got his Baltimore Positive gear on. He is, I don't know, that 5 bites into that crab cake. Man, he put a dent in it, really.
It's delicious.
We've destroyed the coconut shrimp around here. You know, Rasika's my co-host with a K. I'm out of eggnog, by the way. Just so you know. Yo, let's go. Let's go. They told me it was off the menu. I got friends here, Luke. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. 10 times the cash. We're giving these away. I have a stack of these. Roz dropped these off this morning. She was my first guest this morning from the Maryland Lottery. So I have a stack of these to give away. We'll be at State Fair all day tomorrow, 9 to 5 in Catonsville. Friday, we're moving up to Pappas in Cockeysville. I thought we were going to have a little purple pep rally. I didn't know. But yeah. Luke thought he was going to be in Las Vegas and in the Inclinator there overlooking the Excalibur and the Strip, Mandalay Bay. I'm sure you've seen some Radio Row stuff and some Media Row stuff from the first couple of days out there and the game. Let's talk some Ravens here. Yeah. I want to do that. I want to say hello to Jiffy Lube and Jiffy Lube MultiCare, as well as our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION, for putting us out. We're going to have a whole bunch of new sponsors this year. We're doing the Crab Cake Tour. We're doing all this stuff. I don't know at what point football becomes like the thing we don't talk about for a week or two, and baseball becomes that because we're on the precipice of massive change in baseball, and you and I did a long first segment here where Sig's going to join us later on about baseball, but I want to talk a little football with you. Not necessarily the game this week, but just Raven stuff. I mean, since the last time we talked, Anthony Weaver left. Billick many, many times would say to me sort of flippantly, I'm not going to let them just bring a U-Haul back here and take Rex and Mike and Jack and Marvin. Yeah, they get Marvin, but they ain't getting the rest of these guys. You know what I mean? And they're not getting, you know. What just happened out there was a bloodletting in a coaching sense.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I don't know what the plan with Zach and a fresh start and all that, where John's head is after losing a championship game and the offense and Monken, but change is a blowing, and maybe it's good change, right? I mean, Zach Orr is bred to do this.
I mean, this is the cost of success, right? If you're a good organization and you have good coaches and you have good players, then
people
other teams
want
them. So this is going to happen. I mean, it's
probably why Tony Lombardi was here with you. I mean, either way, but yeah.
In a big picture sense, these are good things. If no one ever wants your people, chances are you're probably not doing things right. So from that standpoint, I mean,
everybody wanted their people.
We've talked about Mike McDonald for even going back to last offseason. I think there was a growing sense that, you know, if their defense is as good or better than it was the year before, it's going to be tough to keep him. You know, and we've seen that. Head coaches are trending younger. I mean, Bill Belichick didn't get a job. Mike Vrabel didn't get a job. You know, some veteran coaches, yes, landed somewhere else, but you're seeing this trend younger. So the Ravens have a lot of young coaches. Mike McDonald, Anthony Weaver, Denard Wilson. I mean, this is what happens. But it's an opportunity for someone like a Zach Orr who – it's wild to think 7 years ago. In fact, I even had a chance to chat with him for a few minutes after his press conference on Tuesday. He said, we've come a long way since doing the live radio shows way back when. And
I love Zach.
Yeah. You can just tell.
Love Zach.
And I think a couple things. This is fascinating. First, after years of fans talking about Ed Reed or Ray Lewis or any former player being a coach, you know, being not head coach, but assistant coach. First former Ravens player to become a Ravens coordinator. There have been some former Ravens players who've been a coordinator elsewhere. Mike Caldwell comes to mind right away. But first former Ravens player to become a Ravens coordinator. And also, and you'll appreciate this as someone who's very close with this individual, first Ravens defensive coordinator since Marvin Lewis, who had not been a defensive coordinator anywhere else prior to that. I mean, now Marvin had, 15, 16 years of experience as a linebackers coach? I think 4 different colleges and, of course, with the Steelers. But Zach Orr's calling plays for the first time. And, I mean, I asked Harbaugh about this last Friday. Zach was asked about this when he spoke with the media on Tuesday. That's part of this. It's going to be
Well, anybody
a
that
challenge.
Wears the green dot at any point would be considered to be a guy who is at least chatting the plays out in his own mind, thinking this is a good play or a bad play.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if you've been that guy, you're thinking, if you're a catcher, this is a good pitch or a bad pitch. If you're a pitcher, you know, what are you going to call in this circumstance? Somebody's got to make that call, right, at any point.
But until you've done it, there's going to be some unknown there. So I think, you know, Zach was asked about it. I think he answered it really well. You know, you could check it out. I wrote about it at BaltimorePositive.com this morning, just touching on it. But he had been told, and I don't know the individual who told him. I'm guessing it was a collection of some of the veteran coaches. He was told 3 or 4 years ago, he said, look, if you have aspirations of being a defensive coordinator one day and you're calling the plays, you need to start thinking about that now, because you don't want to be waiting until the bullets fly. You're like, wait, well, what alignment do we want to be? You know, what personnel grouping do we want to have coming in here and everything? So it's something he's mentally been preparing for. It's something that he was asked what makes him so confident that he can do it. He's like, I'm going to prepare. I'm going to work my tail off and I'm going to be ready. He said, if you're not confident, chances are you're not prepared. So I think it's a little more magnified considering the exodus that they just had with some of their veteran, not even veteran, just their defensive coaches that are highly regarded.
Well, not only could those guys have been defensive coordinators here, they're all defensive coordinators now.
Sure, exactly.
So you know, John had to pick the one he wanted.
Yeah.
To some, you know what I mean? Not to some degree, to the real degree, because once McDonald stepped up, he had three guys. He had an associate coach, also a Raven alum, who's further along the food chain of being that guy in Anthony Weaver. And when Weaver didn't get the gig here, it really told me how John's heart was on that. And then I thought, well, hold on. Maybe Steve will give Anthony Weaver a couple million bucks and say, you're going to be John. In the way that whatever the Belichick deal was there, that's always weird, as you can ask James Franklin in Maryland. And like,
That rarely works. I mean, I think it can work. It worked with DaCosta and Ozzie. Worked out great. But there are lots of times you can see something like that not working out very well.
Well, Joe Ortiz left too. So we talk about other guys leaving and other coaches leaving to take promotions. It's an exodus unlike anything we've ever seen out there. I would say that.
I mean, it's definitely up there. I mean, there have been some years where they've lost multiple assistants.
After they go to the AFC Championship game.
But I think when you look at this, I mean, let's face it, Zach Orr is a few years younger than Mike McDonald was, and Mike McDonald had the one-year apprenticeship at Michigan, right? So it is a little more magnified. Look, I don't think it's a deal-breaker that Zach Orr can't be a great defensive coordinator because he hasn't called plays before, but until he's done it, that's an unknown. I mean, it is. It was for Marvin in 1996. We saw Mike McDonald have growing pains early on last year before obviously became one of the, you know, if not the highest regarded defensive coordinator in the NFL. It's why he's coaching Seattle now. But I think when you look at some of the losses, I think it certainly stands to reason that probably want to bring in a couple veteran assistants, maybe with some play calling experience. Not that they're going to step on his toes, but to guide Zach Orr a little more and say, okay, when you're calling plays, you know, the bullets are flying. Think about this. You know, don't lose your head about this. Don't be focused on this. Here's what you want to do. And I'm sure he scrimmaged some of that, and he'll do that this offseason. But that's why, you know, there's a report that they're bringing in Doug Mallory. You know, he was at Michigan most recently, has some connections with the Harbaugh family. Looking at his resume, he's been a defensive coordinator for different college programs. Now, you know, he's older. He's not going to be a threat to Zach Orr, but he's someone who's been in that chair before, so to speak. So I think it makes sense to bring in a couple coaches who have called plays at some point in time just to aid
Antonio
him a little bit.
Antonio Pierce brought in Marvin Lewis.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I mean, I think that's going to be something they're going to have to work through, as John Harbaugh said. But you just said it. The fact that, okay, there's nothing you're going to do to keep Mike McDonald other than
a
coach
in
waiting
scenario.
That
was a funny question to be asked to him at the press conference, by the way.
But, I mean, but it's fans
wanted to
know that.
Is there anything you could have done to keep a defensive coordinator from getting...
And that's where, you just kind of say it. Was there a coach-in-waiting scenario, like Eric with Ozzie years ago? I mean, but, you know, you can ask the question in a roundabout way there. But the fact that...
You know who I'd like to ask that question to? Steve Bisciotti.
Sure.
That's what
Fair
like,
enough.
Yeah, that's
Fair enough.
That's who really deserves
who
that question.
We haven't heard from in Owings Mills in 6 years. Yeah. But that said, I think it was very telling what John and the organization thought of Zach, because that could have been Anthony Weaver. That could have been Denard Wilson, who hasn't been in Baltimore long, but has more experience coaching than Zach
Almost
Orr
should have
does.
Had the Eagles job.
So, yeah. I think, talk to any Eagles fan, they made the mistake. They should have promoted him last year and not hired Deshay. But, you know, I think it speaks to how highly they think of him because he is lacking experience. He's 31 years old. He played with Michael Pierce.
Right.
Zach Orr's last year was Michael Pierce's rookie year as an undrafted rookie. So joked about Zach with that after the press conference. But, you know, it took him hardly any time at all to really embrace the coaching life. I think I shared this with you last week when we talked about this, but I remember running into him at the facility probably a few weeks after he had started. He started like late training camp of 2017. Because remember, he was trying to play elsewhere and no one would clear him with his spine condition. So he officially announced his retirement, I think July or August, whatever it was. And then it was the end of August. He was in the Ravens building as a personnel and coaching assistant, you know, basically an intern, for lack of a better term. But running into him a few weeks later, you know, I said, "What do you think so far?" He's like, "Luke, I knew coaches worked hard. I had no idea. No idea." And it's a common refrain, by the way. You
know, always.
Tony Jefferson, I remember talking to him not long ago and him saying the same thing, but he's embraced that. And
I think I remember being with Jim Schwartz and Marvin Lewis in 1996 and them saying, "These guys have no idea."
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
they have no idea.
I mean, I flat out kind of joked with them. I'm like, "You've just embraced not having any other aspect of a life
Marvin Lewis
during
would say
football
to me,
season.
Call me about 10 o'clock on the office line at night. I'd be like, "Really?"
It's like, when I'm going to bed.
Yeah. I go home, have dinner with my wife and see Marcus and my daughter, and then I come back to work 8:30, 9 o'clock. They go to bed, and I go back to work, and, you know, I work till 11:30, go home, sleep, get back up at 5, and come back to work.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
that's why I live close to the office.
That's the way of life. It really is. Yeah. And I mean, so many coaches, so many players try it and they realize that's not for me.
Ed Reed.
And I know there have been, I think Zach even said this when we were just talking. And, you know, this was nothing, you know, it was just off the record, but it's harmless. He made the comment that he thinks if you're a former player and you want to go into coaching, do it right away, because if you take a couple years off and then you jump into it, it's like, holy cow, I can't do this. So, but, you know, getting back to what this means for the Ravens, I mean, it's going to be interesting in the sense, I mean, even if we're going to say Zach Orr is going to be as good as Mike McDonald was, which is a tall order. Mike McDonald's really good. You know, you saw what, 5 or 6 different teams interviewed him to be a head coach. So he was very, very highly thought of, but losing these other assistants, I mean, it's very clear that the Ravens on the defensive side especially had a cast of stars as far as their defensive assistants, and we know that they're going to experience some attrition on the free agent side, you know, with players. So I don't expect this defense to drop off dramatically, but are they going to lead the league in scoring, takeaways, and sacks again? You know, that first time in NFL history someone had done that. Probably not going to repeat
doing that. I'm
going
to use the word all summer long. They're going to be a diminished team this year. In perception, now in reality, they go play. In perception, we're going to look at their team and think, doesn't look as good as last year. In the same way we looked at 20 when Yonder went away, and we were like, you know, they're going to miss something.
And then
something.
Ronnie Stanley got hurt, yeah.
Yeah, they're going to miss something. They're going to, first off, they're going to lose Queen. They're going to lose a lot. They're just going to lose a lot of guys. And whatever the perception is of whoever's going to play linebacker and whoever's going to play left tackle, I guess. I mean, I'm thinking of the positions where there's going to be a change.
Maybe. I mean, there's still a lot to sort out there, including the cap. I mean,
it's not
it's also not as simple as just releasing him in February and that's that.
Tell me to deal with him. Tell me to deal.
Really. And I don't have the number. I don't have the numbers memorized, and they're not in front of me. But probably have to do a post June 1st. So that right off the bat, okay, you can clear cap space, but that's not available to you until June 1st.
But when you draft a left tackle with the 30th pick, right?
You can, and look, you can draft a really good tackle at 30th overall. That's usually not a year one left tackle, though.
Right.
Generally speaking.
Fair enough.
I still think the best course of action and probably the most realistic course of action for them, if they are set on, we need to move on from this as reasonably quickly as we can, is probably one more year with Ronnie Stanley. See if he'll take a haircut, because chances are, you know, what his cap figure is, which I think is 26. That's the overall number.
Nobody's giving him. I mean, what would he get on the market?
Right. I mean, he'd get money, but not what the Ravens are going to pay him this year.
Well,
so,
I mean, people were afraid of Lamar getting hurt. Right.
Right.
I mean,
so I think what you'd be looking at is, can you work on the deal, take a cut? Maybe it's even a case of he takes a pay cut and then you do what they did with Gus Edwards this past year, where then you made the remaining years of the deal void years. And basically you say, okay, you'll take a cut, but if you bounce back, you'll hit the market and you'll have a chance at biting at the apple, you know, as a free agent, if you're healthy and closer to the guy you were 4 years ago compared to what he's been.
And so I think you and I look at each other and think,
probably
not a great chance.
Right,
that,
yeah. Right. So, you know, his salary, looking at it, I think it's 11. I think he does have a roster bonus that's due that's 4 or 5 million more. So, you know, it's easier said than done. It's easy to say you want to replace him, but you've got to go do it. So I think the most realistic scenario is one more year with Stanley. You try to work on the deal to alleviate some of that cap, you know, create some cap flexibility, draft his replacement, and his replacement plays left guard like Jonathan Ogden did in 1996, or right tackle, and you let Morgan Moses go. However you want to do it, that's probably the way I foresee it playing out, the most realistic way, because again, even if you release him, you're not going to get that cap flexibility right away, and you're drafting 30th. You're not drafting sixth when you drafted him.
Dude, we're going to sit here and go back. Rasik's going to come on a little bit. He's here drinking some water. He's hydrating properly for the events here. We're at Coco's Pub. We're doing all this on behalf of the Maryland Lottery and our friends at Window Nation and Jiffy Lube MultiCare, Wise Markets, Royal Farms. They're all with us. Raskin Global is with us in spirit, but he's on the beach in Wailea right now. And we're doing canned goods for the Maryland Food Bank. If you bring them, you get a cup of soup or bowl. We're calling this Crab Cake Row. Every single thing you're talking about, I'm going to keep going. The word is going to be diminished.
Yeah.
Diminished is going to be my word. They're going to be a diminished roster next year. Now, what they can do with that, what the coaches can do with that, what Lamar's magic can do with that, whether the passing game really takes another step next year, there's not going to be any Beckham. There's not going to be any Queen. Matt Abike is going to get a phone number. Ronnie Stanley's not going to be a better left tackle no matter how you bake this.
Sure.
Whatever you do with this, he's going to go play the way he's going to play. And Linderbaum and Kyle Hamilton are moving into a place where they're gonna earn some money. I mean, they're earning money.
But could still get better, so they're ascending players.
No. They're really good players,
yeah.
But they're going to start costing you money, too.
But if we're talking about 24, though.
Fair enough.
You're right. I'll say this.
They're not going to be in the free agent market.
But I'll say that.
At all.
I mean, they're always in it with someone of value.
First day free agent's stupid anyway. But let somebody else be in with Patrick Queen, right?
Yeah. Point taken.
Yeah.
But I'll present this. Where has being 14-2 or 13-3 gotten them in January over the last 5 years? So
participation
trophy. This kind of goes back to what we've talked about in terms of where they go. If they go 14-3, everyone's going to shrug and they're going to say what? Okay, I'll see what happens third week of January. I mean, that's where they are right now. So in some way,
they can't win a game until the third week of January.
What you just presented about them being diminished, and look, I'm not disagreeing with your overall point, but a lot can happen. And look, they're going to have to draft well, which if they draft well, they'll be fine.
11-6 is a hell of a year. And if things go right for the Bengals, they'll be 13-4. And you'll be playing on the road in Buffalo in week one and Cincinnati in week two and Kansas City in week three.
Maybe you do what Kansas City
did. And that's
just
why I never thought, if you were to give me a dollar and say, am I going to bet on Lamar winning the Super Bowl or not, that would have been my prescription until such point that Burrow got hurt. The Chargers stunk.
Fair enough.
They were really good. The Kyle Hamiltons and the Linderbaums ascended. Beckham performed.
Yeah.
They stayed on the field, right? I mean, they were great this year. I mean, I don't need to even go. I mean, not that I want to belabor that. But
it was the best regular season team in the history of the franchise.
Femi sat on Monday.
If you go from
Femi
week one to week 18, it was the best.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Yeah, so look, it's over. That doesn't mean they're going to fall apart. If you have a healthy Lamar Jackson in the regular season, it has proven over and over and over again, you are going to win a lot of football games and you're going to be in the playoffs, whether you're the division winner and the number one seed or you're a wild card, you know? So that's understood at this point. They're not going to be so diminished that that's not going to be sitting there, assuming you have a reasonable set of expectations in terms of injuries, things of that nature. But that's the challenge. This is the NFL, not for long, right? I mean, the Chiefs were a diminished version this year of what they had been a year ago, 2 years ago, three years ago, four years ago. So there you go. I mean, that's where
Joe Flacco was planking in December.
This doesn't make for great radio. And look, we're going to talk about every element of the offseason. We're going to talk about preseason. Well, we won't actually talk about the fake football games, but we'll talk about training camp. And we will talk about every game week in and week out. But we will be understanding at this point that none of it really matters that much to the big picture narrative and
they have to win the AFC championship game next year
Lamar
for the season
Jackson
to be
and this current era of Ravens football, including the second half of John Harbaugh's legacy.
They've set their own bar high.
And look, yeah. I'm the guy that constantly reminds you it's important as sports fans to not just be so focused on the end result and to enjoy the journey, because if not, boy, it is an effort in vain to be a sports fan if your validation for it is winning a championship every so many years. But that is what this team is facing right now from top on down and the fan base. It really is a case of you've got to break through. How are you going to figure out how to break through? And I don't think the answer is easily in 2019. You know, when that happened in January of 20, what were we talking about? The passing game. Okay, their passing game was markedly better this year. You know, Lamar Jackson played from the pocket at a much higher level this year than he had earlier on in his career. But
still
they're
good
still
enough
not
third
yet.
Week of January, yeah.
So that's a tough that's going to weigh on them mentally. And I don't say that in a doom and gloom way that they won't overcome that, but that's a challenge. That's a challenge for John Harbaugh right now. That's a big challenge for Lamar Jackson right now, who's about to accept his second MVP award in 5 years, which is a tremendous honor. He's worth, you know, his lucrative contract. He's worth every penny that everyone not named Patrick Mahomes is getting paid right now. But he and they need a Super Bowl. And until they get that, there's going to be this constant, yeah, but. And some of the criticism is unfair. Some of it's over the top. There's no question about it. Even a lot of it's over the top. But at the end of the day, people are saying you can't win in January, and you're not winning in January. What are you going to say back? So it's tough. And again, they just kind of have to keep plugging along. And in the meantime, going back to your original point, they are going to experience some attrition, and they are going to need some young guys to step up. I mean, you mentioned Patrick Queen. It's going to be a big offseason for Trenton Simpson, the guy they drafted in the third round back in April to be the heir apparent. I think he can do the job, but just like Zach Orr calling plays, until he's out there and we see him doing it, there's some unknown there. There's always unknown about all these guys.
And whether he's going to look like a first-round draft pick like Patrick Queen blossomed into...
Well, he's a third-round pick. You need him to...
Look like a first-round.
You need him
pick.
To look like a starter. Yeah. You know, if that's the case, then they'll be okay there. You know, I mean, the thing I'll say, yes, they're losing... They've lost some coaches. They're going to lose some players. Still have a lot of really good football players on this team, on both sides of the ball, that are coming back. And guys that you hope are going to be healthier, like a Marlon Humphrey, for example. But, yeah, it's tough not to look at this season as a major missed opportunity because of all the variables. Kansas City being down. Buffalo having to scratch and claw just to get to the playoffs the way they did. Cincinnati not being in the picture because of Burrow. I mean, the Chargers, I think Justin Herbert's a good, really good quarterback. I think the Chargers could be a sleeping giant. They have Jim Harbaugh now and Joe Ortiz, and we'll see
what
happens there.
Joe Ortiz thinks they're a sleeping giant.
So, you know, so it's not going to get any easier, that's for sure. You know, it's only going to get more challenging. That said, the Ravens are a team to be reckoned with, too. All those other teams are talking about Baltimore in the same way, other than Kansas City, you know, because they've become the new Patriots, and everyone's chasing them. So, you know, it's tough not to... And I think that's where fans have struggled. And thank goodness for the Orioles' good news to kind of distract
people.
That's what
people. I'm saying. We might not talk about this a whole lot. I mean, you and I have talked 25 minutes. We haven't talked about Jerry Rosberg at all. Is there anything?
You know,
that was weird. I mean, the whole thing's weird. This exodus of all the coaches.
They were hush-hush about this. Look, I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and say I know what happened there. I'll say this. John Harbaugh and Jerry Rosberg have a great relationship. Jerry Rosberg's daughter works for the organization, works for John. I suspect... Maybe whoever, you know, and what, Tom Pelissero of NFL Network was, you know, no other reporters had confirmed it or anything like that. I mean, I hadn't gotten confirmation from anyone about it. My gut tells me Jerry's been retired. You know, he retired in 2019 with the Ravens. He did have the 5 minutes with the Broncos and being their interim head coach. I'm guessing there was dialogue. And I wouldn't be shocked, and maybe something will come out, and I'm completely wrong about this. Wouldn't be the first time I'm wrong. I'll be wrong again. I think it could be as simple as Jerry had a change of heart that I don't know if I really want to get back into this to that degree. I don't know. Well, John Harbaugh will be asked at the combine or the next time he talks. Probably won't give
an honest answer. Yeah.
Maybe he will, maybe he won't, because maybe it is as simple as Jerry just slept on it and said, you know what, I don't want to devote that much time to it. But it was interesting from the standpoint of know, Jerry Rosberg has a lot to offer an organization. We saw that with how he did kind of stabilize the Broncos at the end after what was a disaster, kind of a season for them 2 years ago.
Well, the whole
ago.
Thing about DaCosta standing behind Harbaugh on the sidelines every week and like where the strategy is and where it comes from. And, you know, John wet the bed on several, as good as the team was, John made mistakes. John had some breakdowns, you know, like in a way you don't want your head coach to have a breakdown. Special teams coach catching that ball with 2 minutes left and they lose that game. I mean, crazy stuff.
Oh, against the Colts,
crazy stuff happened with them.
I will say this, as far as, because a lot of people were taking the Rosberg, taking a game management position. And look, there was no official, he wasn't even hired, so we don't know what the title would have been.
Well, he wasn't going to be the special teams coach. He was going to be the assistant head coach, kind of sort of in the Anthony Weaver.
He certainly would have still been involved with special teams, because when he's been out there as a guest for them the last couple of years, he's involved with special teams. But I do think that was a little overblown, because I have said this to you, in defense of John Harbaugh, which is also a criticism of John Harbaugh, every coach in the league has their occasional struggles with those issues. So I think the idea of a game management coach is a great idea. Why wouldn't you want more people involved with your process and improving how you do things? There's no coaching salary cap. Like, there's no, you don't get a medal for.
Well, you shouldn't get these things wrong in the game.
I agree.
The organization
but if
shouldn't
you
get
have,
them wrong.
If you have someone who's at a 30,000 foot look sitting up, you know, in the press box, in the coach's box, away from the sideline and the chaotic nature that the sideline can be. I mean, I'm there on the sideline in training camp. Training camp. I can't imagine what it's like in week 17 when you're playing for the division. It's chaotic down there. So I think every coach in the league, not just John Harbaugh, could benefit from that idea, however it would look. And look, there are teams who have people that focus on that, including the Ravens. But yeah, you can always get better at that. But it was definitely strange. Again, the team did not put it out, so, you know, whatever happened there was someone was overzealous talking to Tom Pelissero. He was overzealous based on what he heard. Who knows? Or maybe, like I said, it could have been as simple as Jerry Rosberg woke up the next morning and thought, you know what? I'm done being a full-time coach. I don't think I really want to do this to that degree. Maybe we'll find out. Maybe we won't. But certainly it was, you know, it was strange because, like I said, it's not John Harbaugh and Jerry Rosberg are very close. You know, this isn't some, I can't fathom that it was a falling out that got contentious or anything of that nature.
But the weirdest thing is he retired and came back and didn't retire again.
Yeah.
And that all led to speculation that John retired him.
Yeah, I mean, I never got that sense. I think
He's been back a million times, right?
So, yeah, like, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, he's come back plenty of times. Like I said, his daughter works for the Ravens, you know? So it's not as though there's a bad relationship there. I think it very truly could have been there was dialogue. There was talk. Maybe there was even an assumption that they had reached an agreement and, you know, for whatever reason, decided not to. And it doesn't necessarily mean that something wrong happened or someone did something, you know, they shouldn't have done or said something they shouldn't have done. But it's not going to happen. And, well, here we are talking about who they're going to hire to replace inside linebackers coach and a defensive line coach. And, you know, looks like they already have a defensive backs coach. Chris Hewitt, my understanding, is going to stay. So he's been on the staff for a long time, but you know they're definitely going to have to fill some gaps there. You know, probably promote a few from within, which is not a bad thing, but also bring in some people from the outside, which is also nice to have a fresh perspective. You know, especially when you're talking about a team that's been this close. I mean, it's been right there and slipped through their fingers multiple times now in January. So, you know, I don't think there's this overriding clear-cut answer at this point. I think they just got to do it. And, you know, we've talked a lot. You know, we don't need to belabor the details of the AFC Championship. Yeah, they should have run the ball more. But it also comes back to we can't bury the lead when it's as simple as one all-world quarterback outplayed the other all-world quarterback. And Patrick Mahomes is the guy that has done that against everyone, not named Tom Brady, and what Joe Burrow wants in a title game.
Be watching him again this weekend. I'll be at Hollywood Casino on Sunday night. My wife and I are going to go up and just roll the bones. A little Rush reference there for you, and get some beer and cheer and Tay-Tay and Kelsey. And I'll wait for Rasig to do the Kelsey-Justin Tucker thing, and you know you're going to need tape for my mouth for that segment. Maryland Food Bank. Please donate today. We're out here at 5 o'clock at Coco's. They're back here, like, preparing the evening meal here. I don't know. I'm going to get some more food. I'm going to take a break. Rasig is here. I'm going to get a beer, I think. I'm going to get a beer.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I'm going to get a beer. We're going to have a crab cake.
There's no rules against that, right?
Yeah, we have a 3 o'clock guest coming our way. Brian Pugh's going to be here. We're going to talk about brain trauma, brain injury, and that's usually a thing we talk about during Radio Row Week anyway.
That's true.
That's not Radio Row Week. This is Crab Cake Row. We're not in Las Vegas. We're here in Baltimore. Actually, in Lauraville. We're going to be at State Fair on Thursday all day long, 9 to 5, and then on Friday at Pappas in Cockeysville from 9 to 5. We were at... we were at Costas on Tuesday. We were at Fadley's on Monday. That's what we're calling a Crab Cake Row. Great local businesses. Marcella's back here. We're Sig. We've had everybody on this week, giving some love out to the Maryland Food Bank. People are bringing canned goods, dry goods, and we're giving you a cup of soup or bowl for free. Maryland crab, cream of crab, 50-50. Luke likes 50-50. You know what? I'm going to get some 50-50 during a break. We should eat a little soup and make Sig talk a little bit.
Sounds good.
I am past the halfway point of this marathon of 40 hours of radio brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Window Nation as well as Jiffy Lube MultiCare. Luke is hanging around. Sig is here. They've never done radio together. I'm expecting this to be stupendous and momentous. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop watching the kitchen at Coco's and the crab cakes come out. It's like, I'm telling you, it's like Willy Wonka. It's like a factory. It's like Oompa Loompas make the crab cakes here. It's magic that comes out. Back for more from Coco's right after this.